This is the Financial Coconut Podcast, Singapore's first personal finance podcast network. I'm your host, Reggie, aka Your Chief Financial Coconut. Every Thursday, you'll be chilling with me and my guest, who are some of the quirkiest, geekiest people we can find on the internet about how they do money and life. So sit back, relax. We are a few days away from the weekend. Welcome to Chills with TFC.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You buy endowments for 20 years, but you expect those kind of equity returns.
Okay. Okay.
And then maybe 15 years down the road, and you say, hey, how come my policy is like only accumulate so much? Should I go back to scold my agent?
Should I go back to scold my agent?
Welcome to Chills with TFC, where we sit down with the geekiest, quirkiest individuals to learn more about how they do money and life. I'm your host, Reggie, aka Your Chief Financial Coconut, and today we spend time with one of the OGs of Singapore's personal finance space. He has championed DIY for the longest time and is still an important voice in the space, but some say he has gone to the dark side. Because he joined a wealth planning company. So some of his followers ask, so Keith, do you still believe in DIY? Yes, today we spend time with none other than Keith from Investment Modes, one of the most respectable financial writer in Singapore, to discuss what is his take on the financial planning and wealth management space today. Now that he is inside, has his assumption been proven right, or has he shifted his ideas of the broader space? So find out about all that and more in today's episode. This is Chills with TFC. Okay, we are back in the house today of Chills with TFC. I'm your host, Reggie, aka Your Chief Financial Coconut, and we are in with a legend, right? That joined the dark side.
Well, I'll say until like that.
So yes, Keith, introduce yourself. I don't know if people know you, but I'm quite sure they all know your blog. You know, anybody that invests and all that. So yeah, who are you? You came out of hiding. Today, come on set with us.
Yeah, I come out from back behind the blog because not a lot of people see my face around. But firstly, thanks for the invite, Reggie. It's been some time since yes. Our last one. So
2 years, I think.
Two years. What? Didn't realize it's so long.
It's been 2 years.
Yeah. That was before COVID.
Before COVID. Wow. That's why we could meet in person. Then no more.
Yeah, so I write this investment blog called Investment Modes. Used to be more popular lah. Now with all the TikTok and the YouTube, which I don't do so much. So less visibility, So I've been writing that for some time. Used to focus more on stock investing and all. So eventually it ventures into more on investment management, but also the topic of what are your goals and bringing you to the goals.
Today, I got Keith into studio to try to explore how tainted you are. How much brainwashing have you gone through? And also take the time to try to understand what is your perspective of the wealth planning space, from maybe some would call you a white knight, from the outside back then. Shouting out, it should be done this way, blah, 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 blah.
Cannot do this, cannot do that.
Then after you join the dark side. So today we are here to debunk all these myths, what is true, what is not true, what are some things that at first you thought it was like that and then turns out it's different, right? So we can start with what do you actually do now?
So I think some of my blog readers or those that saw my content,
they boycott you.
Not say they boycott, they mistaken that since I think because I put where I work on my blog, let's say you work in AIA, then they'll imagine that you are confirmed a financial advisor, cannot be facilities management person or the or the PMP or all those sort of things. So my official title is Senior Solution Specialist. But it's a long name for the person that is at the back end, right? Supporting the advisor. So we work on the solutions, and there are a lot of aspects about financial planning or wealth management, like what goes into the onboarding process. And there's a lot of data, there's a lot of formatting or documents that clients see on a frequent basis, annual basis, and all those sort of things. So you need someone at the back end of it to actually like aggregate all these things and then format them nicely. Because Provident serves mostly the higher net worth, right? And one of the things that they want to actually aspire or plan for, right, is actually an overseas education. There are a few countries, right? Like how much does it cost now? What's the living thing? So you need someone at the back end to do all this research, ma. This person. Yeah.
So you're not part of the sales process?
I am not part of the sales process. But in a certain sense, because like some of the more complex cases, right, the advisors come to us to actually discuss some of these things. So it does give me a certain color, like what clients are looking for, some of their concerns, and how complex some of these situation is. So I do get some of these perspectives, which is quite interesting if you contrast it against how my readers look at their own situation in terms of their net wealth is different groups and how similar or different they are. Yeah.
So did any reader boycott you as you make the shift? Did they feel like 你叛徒? So you have moved to the other side?
No, but in a certain sense, like recently there was one episode, right? I think it's more like a private episode, and it's dealing with because I sort of defended some of the influencers that due to all the cryptos kind of situation to provide a certain perspective. That my thinking is that there's definitely some you look at it, you know that what. Everything or they just doubt.
Yes, they just doubt.
But there are some, right? In order to have this crowd and in this content media business long, right, you have to preserve that reputation.
Yeah.
And in order to preserve that reputation, right, you do your own due diligence. When you're deep into some of these things, sometimes your due diligence, maybe you lack the sophistication. Although you do it, but it didn't turn out very well. Some even they do it very deep, right? Then you still have situation like FTX blowup. Yeah. I can say personally and honestly, right? I didn't expect FTX to blow up. So because I defended, and then someone actually like relate the way that he puts it across, that is that now that I joined the financial industry, like I'm not so impartial anymore. Of course, we're discussing that thing, but it's sort of like giving an idea, oh, okay, so that's how people look at it. If you go there, right, then most likely you'll be tainted in some ways. It's how tainted it is.
Yeah. So do you feel you are tainted?
I would say that before I joined, right, I have a certain idea like how the industry is. And so
what is this idea before you join? What's your perspective?
It's very sales driven. No? And then there's a lot of this kind of like possible economic bias, because let's just say that in terms of the financial advice, it's quite commissions driven. And because of the economic bias of that structures, right, it tends to be a more sales driven process. There's a lot of unknown there. The background is my friend Christopher Tan approached me whether I'm interested in that role. And I don't have to do too much due diligence because like I work with them in the past. So I know roughly that how different things are in terms of their structure and all that. But there's always like we join company is like that, ma. Sometimes you see what you see on the outside, what's in the inside can be totally different, ma.
Yes.
Because of the working relationship, not a lot of due diligence there that need to be done.
So then after you are in the industry for a while, you know, are some of these assumptions true?
I think what I understand about like that industry and or in the past, right, largely is correct. Okay, really, really. Largely is correct. And I have to like try to explain that in the sense that just now I said already that it's quite, I think there's a certain economic bias and all that. But I do have friends that are under the structure. They have their clients' interests at heart. So there is. But the problem is always that, let's say I am a 25-year-old, I come in, and then if I'm looking for financial advice, or I have some financial needs and a product, it's very difficult to actually tell like which one of them, right? It's actually good enough to actually recommend things to me. Let's say they're interested, like what makes a suitable financial advisor or wealth planner or wealth advisor for you, right? Usually, like, you have to look for three things. Okay. Firstly, integrity. Mm. Okay. This person needs to have your interest at heart. Yes. The second one is more sophistication, or what I would say competency. Mm. So they need to know how things work, like all this investment stuff and all this insurance stuff and all, they need to know their stuff. Okay. Then the third one, right, is execution. They have to be kind of prompt enough for you. It's quite difficult to find these three together, because usually it's like, if you have someone that is like, know all these things very well, but their execution sucks, right? What happens will be, right, oh, they can tell you a lot of stories about like what investments to go into, but when you try to execute them, well, every time it's like, wait a long time, or all these sort of things. Then of course you have those like friends and families, they will suggest that I go with my cousin, who is also in the wealth advisory space. So these people, they have your interest at heart, most likely integrity and all. But some of them, maybe the sophistication level is not there. It's quite challenging to find these three. And that is the landscape.
So you're saying your team has these three?
I wouldn't say that. Okay. I wouldn't say that. But because we try to aspire there. Because even the sophistication part, it's an ongoing learning.
Learning, yeah.
I dare to say that I think all our advisors, right, they have that integrity portion of things. Mm-hmm. Execution is a company thing. It's how tightly we hold that. And that one is a function of like how well Provident does in terms of how we try to continuously improve.
I feel like I need to send you guys invoice already. Later I send invoice, I send to Provident. Say today is sponsored episode.
Walao.
Maybe talk a little bit about the integrity part. Right? How do I measure integrity of an individual?
I think integrity in a sense is also like, it's a mixture of, let's say, trust or something. And we can think from our angle, like why do we go with our friends as advisors and all those things? It's because you have a period of time to assess their character and all those sort of things and their relationship with you. So in a certain sense, like, that will only be only the first part of it. But in order for them to work with you for a long time, right, the hard truth is you need a period, right, to actually establish whether that trusting. And it cannot be like just like one meeting, two meeting, even three meeting. So it's usually like maybe a 1 to 3 years process. And probably you have to work with them over these periods to see that, oh, okay, we've gone through some of this market volatility. Whether their recommendation or all these things is with your interest at heart.
That way of thinking probably works for like some of the bigger clients, right? They're more high net worth. They can test multiple advisors at the same time. You know, like my friends, they buy a lot of property. They got multiple agents running at the same time. What do you can get me? What do you can get me? And then eventually they will narrow down until the few people that they want, right? But for a lot of the smaller people, you know, the man on the street, the retail crowd, you get hunted down right after uni, you know. so like, how do you go about, like, you know, at that level, you know, for the mass crowd to look at financial planning as a service?
I guess it's whether it's for the higher net worth or even if your net worth is not there, right? I think the hard truth is there's no easy way. Like, their general idea is farm it out, right? And then have built that relationship over time, right? And then see whether those three, they can deliver on those three things. If you don't have so much money, that is a hard thing to do. But you've seen most of us do that to a certain degree, because like, let's say like a lot of people, they will have potlets of money inside different robos. Why that is the case, right? And not a large sum of money in one of them, right? It's that they're testing it out, man. There's a lack of trust. And so it ends up in situations like that. And it's not just for those people that is, whether it's affluent or below those. On, if you look at some of the financial, their own balance sheet, right? For the higher net worth, they also like that. So everyone is trying to do the same thing, trying to find trust and all. And everyone's struggling with it. Yeah.
What's your hot take on robo-advisor?
I think if you look at the local ones, right, and how they evolve, right, a lot of them, they started off with, let's say, strategic portfolios, different flavors of strategic portfolios. So you can see different that like how StashAway is different from Scythe and how it's different from Endowus and all those sort of things. But you realize eventually, like at this point, right, the managed portfolios does not take a front seat. They started like offering like more funds, individual funds, or they offer lets you trade stocks and all these kind of things. So they become a platform. They are less of an advisor because like an advisor is more like trying someone that tries to bring you towards your financial goals. But they are leaving a lot of things right to the users, right, for them to actually figure out. That is their model. And I feel that which net worth level, right, what everyone is actually looking for, right, is someone, right, to actually coach them along the way, right, sometimes to push them along that, hey, you have $2,000 per month spare, right, you need to keep funneling it into your wealth. But it's not so, sometimes not so much of letting that person to make the decisions themselves. And because of that, right, the way that I look at them, they are not so different from the platforms that exist before that. Because the platforms that exist before that, you have your, let's say your Dollar Dex, FundSupermart, iFast and all, right. They also let you make a decision. They have a assortment of funds out there. They probably, that time, iFast, they don't have the stock trading one. So if you look at this situation, like what's so different between them and the previous platform? So I see no differences there. Like it's just some slight difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So it's really just more of a UI and a fee kind of situation at this point in time. Because I get it, you know, a few years ago when they first started, there was a lot of managed portfolio, okay? This one, your risk parity, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you just come in, you pick, that's it. Simple questionnaire and then you pick.
Correct.
But today, they are integrated with a lot of back-end, right? A lot of new offerings and then it becomes like an open platform for you to then decide. So I kind of know what you're saying, lah. Fair point. Okay, interesting. So we come back to the financial planner kind of discussion. You say that a lot of things that we perceive, that means the common man that perceives on the street is true, okay? After you enter the space, right? So after Keith venture into the dark forest, he comes out and say, yeah lah, what you are thinking is quite true. But what are some things that at first you thought it was like that, but after you went in, you realize that maybe it's not as true?
I didn't really know that the degree is so big. Like say, for example, we always view a financial advisor or planner, right, that is able to offer two things, the insurance aspect as well as the investment aspect. For accumulation, you have your endowments, then of course you have your ILPs and all those sort of things. So I would think that I thought it was a equal pie. But when we go through some of the our hiring process or even through our interactions, right, then we realize that they are more focused on the insurance aspect of things. Like their insurance knowledge, right, a lot of them, right, it's quite power. Okay. It's so much that actually like in Chinese we call 盖过 their investment stuff, such that you don't see them accentuate that portion of things. And that was one thing that quite surprised me. Then there are other things like, say for example, how I see some of our client advisors operate, right? That surprised me because like last time I'm quite a numbers person, Mark. So I would think that what will actually sell, right, is a lot. You need a plan that some of these numbers make sense.
I thought so too, you know.
Yeah, that's not the case.
That's not the case. Selling is a very emotional process.
It's not just about hard facts.
Yes, it's
a very emotional, but it's more like the hand holding part. Like my boss Chris will say this is bedside manners. So bedside manners is a lot of like those hand holding. If there's like your portfolio is down, difficult condition, how do they deliver it? Whether they take care of you first in a certain sense, like you're panicking because you're afraid of something, right? And you have to like acknowledge that fear. And before you say all the numbers, or they're not going to listen because that's not what they are concerned. Their concern is you give them this portfolio, now it's down so much, they're blaming you for it, they're angry. And how do you actually tackle some of these angriness? So that's part of it. But it's also like, what I also learned is also like, in order for you to help people, right, that sales process need to work. You need to close cases. Meaning to say you need to close a client. And a lot of times it's your presentation. So you can't just show everyone the numbers like, oh, you run this Monte Carlo simulation, this is like 99%, all those sort of stuff. So when we go to all these kind of things, we only have limited attention. So everything has to be quite 有条有理, like in Chinese.
Yeah. Format, must have structure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even before that, I know it's like kind of a hard truth, lah, because like, say for example, I look at some of my friends' financial situation. They are recommended by some of financial advisors that they know outside. I look at their situation on whatever that is recommended. I don't agree with all of it. Okay. Like some of them, they are underinsured and all, right. But if you philosophically think about it, right, if they are not at that those kind of road shows, right? And some of my friends, right, they will even be less covered. And if something happens to them, then they're in a more disastrous situation. Mm. This kind of argument, right, you can view it positively or negatively. So usually I say that this is a necessary evil. It's not a good situation, but yeah lah. So because you know something like that, right? Like their advisor managed to close them. So over here, it's also sometimes quite sian ma. You work on a case, you really have the prospects.
Interest at heart.
Interest at heart. Do all these kind of things. But somehow or other, they cannot understand it. They cannot understand what you share with them. And they didn't come on board as a client. So you have some good benefits, but they don't get to enjoy it, then how you help them? Like some, these kind of arguments, when I hear other people say, right, it can sound like hey, you're trying to hard sell some of these things.
Yeah.
That's my truth, lor. Yeah.
Okay. Fair. Well, that's interesting. Never thought I would hear that from you. So comment in the comment section, has Keith gone onto the dark side?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, fair. But I think another interesting thing is, in the past, you are quite synonymous with like do it yourself.
Mm.
A lot of DIY ideas. Don't buy this, don't do that. Do this. You know, DIY.
Mm.
You know, you even publish your portfolio openly out in the on your site and everything. Right? Mm. So if you guys didn't know, you know, maybe because people don't read as much these days. Yeah. Go to Investment Modes. Keith publishes his portfolio there. When he buy, when he sell, what price, blah, blah, blah. Everything is there. Right. So you were so synonymous with DIY. Mm. Do you still believe in that? Do you still think that people can DIY?
Possible if, let's say, you are conscientious, okay? And what does that mean? Meaning to say, like, you are willing to actually put in to do the deep work. If not, right, it's not going to be helpful for you. So the whole situation that I look at it is like that. Just now I say it's quite difficult to find a person that is high integrity, have competency together. Then the alternative is, of course, you do it yourself. Lah. But we are all busy people and not everyone, right, likes this kind of thing. Even if you like this kind of thing, it's kind of like a tedious process.
It is.
So if you try to DIY, right, a good example is someone who is successful is that there's a lot of different things out there, right, that seemingly can build wealth, can help you accumulate wealth, can get you where you are supposed to go. But which one of them really works, how they work, what are their shortcomings, right? And which one is more suitable for yourself? I've been through that journey. There's a long process for you to actually like try to figure out. And you can see inside chat groups and all, right, people are trying to do that. Okay, they start out with something, then when something happens, like market gets volatile and all that, and then their stock goes down, right? They have their doubts, which is normal. But along the way, they are trying to figure out whether this method is actually right or not.
Or should I change a lane and all this kind of thing?
Yeah, or should you change your lane? So because of that, that can be quite a tedious process. Some people, some conscientious, meaning to say that you will be willing to put in work, go deep into it, understand some of these things better, right? Where you want to get to, right, is to find out, like, out of these different wealth building methods, right, which few are more suitable for you. You can understand, like how they work. What are some of the pros? What are some of the cons, right? At the end of it, it should give you enough conviction, right, such that you dare to sink in more of your money in.
Mm.
So say, for example, this person, let's say we talk about that this person have a surplus of let's say, $2,000 a month. Okay. When we say surplus, meaning to say like your take home income, you minus off your expenses, this person have $2,000. So less convicted about it, your DIYing and all that, right? You will have potless inside these few robots. Maybe you have inside this REIT ETF and then you try this robot.
It's quite a phenomenon.
Yeah. Yes. Then you say, wow, some of the FANG stocks are nice. Then you put in some of the FANG stocks. But a lot of times it ends up like that. And so there's a lot of cash sitting there. So those people, if you go deep into it, right? And then if you DIY, right? You get into that mechanism, right? By right, if you understand that, okay, does all this index investing work? And then you understand the pros and cons. And then if you're convicted, right, you say, okay, I understand that to build my wealth, right, I depend on the market, okay? But a large part of it is that I need to funnel the money into it. So if they understand that, then they will know that, okay, I have this surplus, $2,000. Oh, just keep funding $1,500. So these people, right, these DIY people, they can get a good outcome. I think lah, okay. Let's say you're a truth seeker, which is what I try to do, like in how I carry myself, not just in work and all those things. Because if you find something closer to a truth, then you have conviction, ma. Then you dare to put most of these in. But due to how we live our life, we cannot do something like that. So I preach that, but I understand the struggles.
Yes. I get it. I mean, to be clear, some people ask me like, how can I think this way or how do I do something? I said, okay, you first must have a lot of time. You must have a lot of energy and you're willing to put in the work to do these things, right? And I understand many Singaporeans are working very hard day in, day out, every week. You know, at night you still want to study chim-chim things, man. You know, or on the weekend you still want to like do a lot of extra work. If it's you, then great, right? But I also have shifted my perspective of like, okay, actually not everybody wants to do it this way. And there are other ways to go about managing it.
No, but there's certain nuance to it in a certain sense. Like if you see enough webinars, then they'll say if you have a lot of time, then maybe you can DIY. The nuance thing is it's about focus. It's a difficult thing, like how focus and all. And a lot of times it's more like consuming content, right, that is like just on one subject itself. Say for example, like some of the people that I know, right, they when they started all this, they just started, let's say index investing, they'll read this book, Render Walk Down Wall Street. It's a book, okay. Reading a book, at least instead of articles, right, there's enough breath. So at least you can understand the pros and the cons better. And then you might be able to develop greater conviction. But nowadays with most people, they prefer to actually consume all the articles or the
short content
outside. You don't develop that depth. And that's usually the problem.
Yeah, I find it very problematic. Yes. So, which is why I try very hard to do a lot of this kind of like concept breakdowns rather than like, oh, do this, do that. I found this, you know, that kind of content. But some people say it's very cheap, you know. It's very cheap. It's like, I really try to water it down already, you know, like keep it simple, break it down, all that. But yes, thank you all for tuning in every week, okay? Yeah. Yes, we work hard to try to help you guys through this process. Yeah, but I also believe that to get to this part, right, in my head, right, in terms of like setting a financial plan, it's a three-step process, right? Goals, you must get clarity of your goals, what do you want? And then the plan, which is the strategy. And then after that, there's risk management. So to me, this is a three-step process, right? Set your goals first, develop a plan upon the goals, and then manage the risk from there, right? And I think a lot of the discussion out there, whether is it with the wealth managers or robo-advisors or even content creators, a lot of people maybe they talk more about the different strategies that are at play. Sometimes they rehash information. Maybe they read from your blog and then they just rehash the information. It's very possible. Trust me, I know a lot of these kind of things. But I want to ask you a little bit on the goals side of things, right? Like, what kind of advice will you give, like, the millennials figuring out their life? You know, like, what kind of goals to go for? Or do you have a framework in your head around, like, how do I develop? Like, this is the goal that I want.
I think in a certain sense, like, you distill down very well. Like, people in our industry, they don't explain like that. Okay, investment people explain like that. But, like, our brains are synced, like that. That one is
my post-production must put investment modes approved.
I think it's something like that. Okay, people have like different way of actually saying that. So the goals portion, right, definitely leads everything, because like, why are most people doing all this? Mm. It's because they want to live the life that they want to live.
Yes.
So what does live the life that you want to live means? That you can distill down to some life goals, and usually these life goals, right, you need some financial to actually support it.
Yes.
Okay, so for all these financial goals, right, they have their own characteristics. Okay, as a technical person, that's what I'll say. Like my colleagues back in office, they will have a different way of saying characteristics, is like a engineer way.
Which is the stuff I love. Yes, please continue.
Yeah, so these characteristics, like, usually is like you look at these goals, right? Usually some of the very standard ones is your time horizon. How long do you have, right, before you need the money? Okay, then there's also the other permutation, like how much effort can you invest in something like that, and then really like how much capital that you have, how far away it is. So these are some of the characteristics around the goals itself. Each of these goals, right, they have different kind of like characteristics that might be slightly different. Majority of them are quite similar. So give you an example. Let's say you're saving for renovations, or whether you're saving for your children's education, all these kind of things. They're pretty similar. Like you're saving for renovations, right? Usually it's like about 3 years away, very fast. Children's education probably is like, it's maybe a 18 to 20 years thing. Okay. The characteristic is that you're saving from this point to somewhere over here, right? There is usually, there's no need to touch them, right? So it's a basic accumulation, right? Those with a longer horizon, right, you can tahan more volatility. That 3 years one, right, you cannot tahan more volatility. So that is a characteristic. Now, compare that to something else. Let's say you have a pot of money. You're actually planning to be financially independent in 3 years' time. So that will mean some accumulation, but also spending down the money. Now, when you spend down the money, right, there are certain things to actually take care of. Like, how long do you need this income to last? If you need the income to last for a longer period, there is more spectrum of outcomes, like whether you're lucky or unlucky. And that might mean that you need to have enough equities inside your portfolios. If let's say, for example, this person is 34 years old or 35 years old. So technically speaking, probably 65 years going forward.
Yes, yes, yes. The NUS Research Center estimates that most millennials will live to 100 years old by the projection, you know, from there. So shout out to all you centenarians. Very soon, all of you will live to 100 years. So that's the hypothesis, yes.
So because of that, right, in order for them to last, right, the research shows it's better to have some equities. But you can imagine, if we're talking about retirement, usually people say quite a bond-heavy portfolios. So once you understand some of these characteristics, right, then you're right to say we can think about the strategies. Okay, what are some of the sound strategies for that time horizon? I will usually group that strategy and the risk management together, because like the risk management involves the strategy, but maybe you're looking at it as an ongoing basis. Like, how do you risk manage it? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So then, now that we got a little bit of clarity on like, you know, some of your thoughts around like discovering the goal, right? I believe this is a much longer discussion. How do you discover yourself? How do you define these goals? Why do you want to do these things? Blah, blah, blah. It's much longer discussion. We can do this at another time, you know, but because I think a lot of people before tuning in may have already bought some stuff, or may have already signed up with some services, or like FAs or like wealth planners or even robos, whatever, right? So how do you then strike something as, oh, this is a bad plan, or like what is a good plan?
Two things. The first thing is that there's certain, like, I would say the technical things, right, that shouldn't go wrong. Like say, for example, like if let's say you're trying to accumulate for your children's education over there, a bad plan is someone that is less sophisticated. They plan for you, or sometimes even you plan for yourself, right? Some of these, the technical part, you don't respect. It doesn't make sense. Okay,
like you buy endowment for 20-year long kind of thing.
You buy endowments for 20 years, but you expect those kind of equity returns.
Okay, okay.
And then maybe 15 years down the road, and you say, hey, how come my policy is like only accumulate so much? Should I go back to scold my agent?
Should I go back to scold my agent?
It's like the AB move, right? Scold, don't scold, scold.
Yeah. Then they'll go to the insurance company, complain, and then you'll make the newspaper and all those sort of things. That's one part. The other part is that a bad plan is one that you set at the start, right? And then you don't review, and then you don't update it. Because life is a spectrum of probabilities. So with the technical expertise, right, we try our best to actually map out that. 20 years, you need, let's say, $90,000, right, for your NUS or tuition fee. That's the plan. But along the way, right, if let's say the portfolio doesn't do so well, right, the advisors need to like review with them, right, and then say that, hey, okay, the financial products that we put you in is sound, right? But like, this is not a good sequence. So in order for you to reach your goals, right, you need to like actually like funnel in more money. So say, for example, like somewhere along the way, you also do well in your career, and then you have that aspiration last time, like, hey, my parents sent me to Australia to study.
Now NUS is not enough.
NUS is not enough. Okay, I have the aspirations, right? I want to like see whether I can satisfy that or not. So it has to be updated.
That's like a strong goal, right?
Yeah.
And we're not saying NUS not good. Okay. Fair. I like that way of thinking about things, and I'm a big proponent of that, right? I even go so far to look at some of the gerontology studies in the UK to try to map out like how is your consumption pattern going to be like.
Wow, okay.
Right? So,
that's serious stuff. Okay.
So I look at some of the studies, and there's a lot of data to show like that, because over there, you know, they have done this a little bit more, a bit longer, right? So the long-term gerontology, okay, gerontology is study old people, okay? So I look at some of their study, and most of your, you know, consumption that you do today will peak at about 48. Okay, about 48 years old. And I think it's quite aligned with how I look at this thing. You will try less things. You may double down on certain interests. And as you double down on certain things, they don't get more expensive. In fact, if you know a lot more people in the particular, let's say you're gardening, right? And then you know a lot more people in the gardening group, your cost of pursuing the hobby comes down, right? So there's a general tendency for those things. So I like to propagate some of these thoughts so that you get a bit more clarity in your models. Right, because sometimes I feel that the financial advisor, the model is an endless upward trend. Okay, it's only an upward trend. So, it's more and more and more and more and more and more. So, it's an endless upward trend. And to me, you're pricing it a bit too much optionality. But you also say about the spectrum of possibilities, right? And that's something that we must respect, right? We are humans. You know, 5 years down, you may find a partner that you want to like, okay, we're going to escape from this place. we're going to elope, right? We go somewhere else, you know, or something happened to you and you have a change in your thought process. So pricing in optionality is quite important in a plan, I feel. But how much is too much, or how much is too little, you know, in factoring options in our plan, like having this range of spectrum of choices?
That's a good question. Actually, I try to like formulate this more recently. The hard truth is, right, if you want to be more conservative in a lot of these plans, right, basically, the general idea is you put in more money, okay? And when we talk about, let's say, the spectrum of returns, right? What it means is, right, you can look at that spectrum, right? Like the one at the bottom is unlucky, okay? Maybe they went through a bear market, a really, really bad bear market. Let's say, not say Great Depression. The ones usually the worst off one is the 1970s high inflation period. Then there are, of course, the really, really lucky ones, which means that they went through a secular bull market, right? Inflation is like kind of moderate, very manageable. So if you look at this one, right, it's not just one returns. It is a spectrum of considering that So if let's say some financial planner plans for you, right, they're actually using a certain planning returns for you, let's say about 7% or 5%. The number is used for planning, but most likely that would be not be the one that you experience it. So if you want to buffer for the unlucky ones, right, basically speaking, right, is that you're assuming, let's say your returns is like damn lousy. You don't not sure what's the plan going forward, right? But you're assuming that your returns is going to be like very lousy. Meaning you say instead of 5%, you're getting like maybe 2.5%, which is like bond-like returns for equity. Okay? So that will set aside a lot of money. Okay? But we have competing goals, ma. You can't set aside one goal. So a good way to look at this one is that at the start of all these things, right, you don't think about whether you're lucky or not lucky so much. You plan for, let's say, the median returns. If, let's say, the use a conservative enough planning returns, right, you look at long enough history and find out what's a planning returns. Usually, like, it's around 5-6% for equities and all that. This will be the part where some people will be quite incredulous. Are you using too low or not? Look at the past 10 years, S&P 500 is doing how much? But if you look at longer term data, right, you realize that, okay, what we experienced in the past 10 years, right, is actually a lucky sequence. Mm. Usually, after a lucky sequence, what comes after that? Unlucky sequence. Yeah, yeah. So if that may be what you're experiencing, I think it's more conservative to use a more conservative planning returns. At the start most of your goals, right, you have these few goals. Say, for example, let's say you're getting ready for renovations, that furnishing you have out of pocket, and of course, children's costs. And then after that, once you settle some of these things, right, maybe some down payment for your home, that one may come after that. Then maybe you start saving for your retirement or financially, these few goals. So try to factor in these few goals, right? Like plan with a conservative median returns. That will work out like how much you actually need. Then as you progress further, right, we're not sure how it will carry you. If you do well in your career, right, both your spouse and yourself, right, you will suddenly see that your income gets better. You have more surpluses. It depends on out of all these goals, right, which one is actually like more important to you. One of the key things, like before that, when Reggie talked about it, right, it starts off with goals, right? One of the key elements is that you need to, inside your head, right, you need to have a certain priority about your goals. Recently, I came out with one article that maybe a little bit controversial. It's like I explain to people what is my highest financial goal at this moment, which is to make sure that I have enough financial security. So to me, out of all these things, right, that one is the highest out there. And you might disagree with that, right? But you have to like work out some of these things. Like for some, right, they believe that children is their future, right? And being able to pay for it, that ranks quite high. Higher than their retirement. That is maybe higher now. You have to have that inside your head, right? And usually when we're talking about this, it's more like a little bit long drawn out, like maybe 5 or 6 years, those kind of goals. If you have that idea about what's your priority, right? When you have this surplus of income, right? In order to make your goals more certain, right? You divert more of this additional surplus to those goals. Now we'll see how the market moves from there. If let's say you are lucky, you turns out to be lucky, right, you can lower the risk for these portfolios, okay, so that subject to less volatility, since you have already achieved that goal already, additional resources you divert into the next priority lah. So that's the blueprint to tackle this, which is why you see when we talk about, we go back to what's a good plan or what's a bad plan, right? It has to be constantly reviewing some of these things. Either the planner do it for you or you have to like do it yourself.
I like that frame of thought. Right? And fundamentally, that already factors in that optionality involved. Right? Like you have some basic lineup, you prioritize, and then if you have more, if things perform better, you can do more, and you know you don't need to over plan. I think that's a decent plan. But we can keep evolving this question, right? Because we can be more sophisticated on modeling some of these things, like how people consume, what their major expenses, blah blah blah. You know, on top of the goals, pretty much.
But I think the important thing is like we have to listen to a perspective of your clients, and And for this one, it's more like listen to your own perspective. If let's say you're doing it yourself, okay? And this has to be layered together with some technical sensibility. Let's say, for example, right? Because we have those kind of like prospects or clients come to us, right? They have already made their wealth already. But what they're unsure of is like, how much is enough? Mm. Okay. If you, let's say, I want to send my children to NUS tuition. How much is it? Now, the tuition fee 1 year is 10,000.
Mm.
4 years, 40,000. 20 years down the road, inflation, whether it's 3%, 4%, roughly 90,000, 100,000. That's a figure. If you have a lot of money, right? In order to fulfill this goal, just remember to set aside. Either you want to put it inside a balanced portfolio, just put 50,000 inside so that you'll grow somewhere there. Or if you're conservative, just set aside 100,000 for it. These are easier. The retirement one, right? Financial independence is tougher because
there are too many moving parts. The goals are varied. Yes.
Yeah. And a lot of people say different things about it. So everyone is like trying to figure out like how much is that enough number.
Yeah.
So they come to us for that, right? And we have like software to actually determine things like that. But a lot of times, right, we have to find out like some of the client's perspective about some of these things. Like say, for example, if the market is not doing so well, right, how would you spend your money? Are you okay to actually like, instead of spending 5,000 per month, right, you spend like, let's say 3,000, 4,000 per month. And most of them, right, they are quite flexible. Like people understand that they are quite flexible. But there are some, you can imagine that they say, I die need 5,000. Mm. They have their own perspective, but there is some technical things, right? You cannot violate one. It's things like that. Say for example, they only have $400,000, right? And then they want to have, let's say, 35,000 in income per year.
Mm.
Mathematically, cannot one.
Yeah.
So that's why these two things like have to like marry. You have to listen to them, but at the same time, that's what they're coming to you for, to get those numbers more correct. Yeah.
Fair. Cool. I think you've shared a lot. Mm. Great stuff. Closing lah. One last question. Mm. So if someone is thinking of joining the space, you know, financial planning, wealth management, what is one liner you have for that?
Walao, this question is hard.
It's like, what a kung for you to jump in.
The controversial answer is like, or the career planning answer is like, you have to understand the landscape that you're jumping into, whether it fits your character or not. A lot of times, I think, talk to enough people in the industry and all that, and try to make sure you know who you're talking to lah. Someone that is like maybe more neutral, maybe they're more experienced, that they see all these things.
Not trying to recruit you guys.
Yeah. It's like say, wow, how much can you earn in your job? Like that. You come over here.
Well, a lot of fear mongering.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, you see. Like in 3 years time, we will have a Jaguar and all these sort of things. I don't think everything would actually fit your character nicely, because sometimes you don't really know yourself that well. But it'll be different. This kind of like advice is different if, let's say, you're fresh joining in without so much baggage versus someone that wants to train.
Mid-career, let's say a mid-career. Someone that's, you know, now Hangzhing Pai, you know, like times are hard, you know, and people are thinking, oh, maybe I should leave my manufacturing job, or I should leave my, you know, like I should join the financial space, and then financial planning becomes an option.
I think it's trade-offs. Like what you gain in your industry if you continue to stay, like this job sucks, right? But you if you jump to another place, is it better? Because sometimes this place sucks because the boss sucks. So that one is a easy problem to fix. Unless you have jumped enough, then you realize that all bosses suck. Okay. Then that one probably is a problem. Mm-hmm. Okay. So usually mid-career switch, right? It depends on your financial situations. Because a lot of my colleagues, not say a lot, some of our associate advisors, they're doing career switches Like one of them is, he has his own family business, general manager, right? He decided to switch over. Another one, right? He works in a government organizations and then he switched over. So a lot of times we also try to help them. We try our best in our interview process, right? To make sure that they have that characteristics that have a high chance of succeeding. And then they're coming in into Provident, right? For the right reasons. Because if let's say we don't do a good job, then also not nice, ma. Let's say that if it doesn't work out, because they're taking a lot of like risk when they do these kind of things. But for most of them, what we observe is that you got to take care of your finances well before
you can be a good financial advisor.
Yes, yes. If this is what you're actually looking for, but if let's say you're a hunter,
then.
And then you're actually looking for sales and all, then it's a different matrix, right? You got to understand whether all these things, if you jump from your those IT sales job into this one, right, are you going to still earn better compared to that one? Mm-hmm. So different metrics.
Cool, yeah. Cool. Thank you. Thanks for coming on the show. Mm.
Stay tuned all the way after this quick note for our personal money question segment. Before that, I hope you've learned something useful today. Join our Telegram group, follow us on our socials, and check out thefinancialcoconut.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, so three money questions. Number one is, what has been your best and worst investment you've ever made?
I don't have best investment. Like the best investment, is like those make 200-300% that I can plug off. Like, unfortunately, don't have like a lot. It's like if I make money, right, it's like the capital size is too small. Okay, so that's the hard truth. Like, I'm disappointed with myself. Worst investments, I have crypto investments. Mm. They all went to zero. Mm. Yeah, mm. And bad judgment. Really bad judgment. You let go of a lot of like traditional risk management.
Okay.
And all that. If it goes down to zero, confirm it's a bad, but I wouldn't say there is like one that like
stands out to be the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether it financially impairs me. Okay. Don't have,
so we need another episode to talk about investment modes, crypto losses.
Walao, might like that.
Okay. Next question. What's one thing under $100 that has been a game changer for you?
Probably two. Okay. Mm. Not six game. Okay. One of them is like one of the cups, one of metal, like those kind of like cups that keeps drinks.
Thermoflask.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thermoflask. Why it's a game changer is because like that thing itself, right, is like, well, and then it's, instead of you needing to open it, it's like a cup like that. So you just slide and then you can open. Mm. And these are some of the things that will encourage you to actually drink more, because every time you are doing your work and then you see the bottle and then you want to drink, right? And I'm not the one sort kind of that get thirsty very easily. So I have to force myself to drink. Mm. So your brain will be thinking, hey, you need to open it up and then...
So you reduce the resistance.
I reduce the resistance. But the surprising thing is also like it really holds the temperature quite well. Because it cost me $17. You all can go to Shopee and buy. Like, it's under this brand called JML and then it's called Arctic la. Okay. Yeah, I'm not sponsored by them.
I would love to be sponsored by them. Yeah, so please can contact us. Yes. Last question is, one place you learn that you think is underrated?
I think this website called It's A Wealth of Common Sense by Ben Carlson, right? I think it's a good blog because all the articles are pretty short. Let's say you're holding, let's say, a broad-based diversified portfolios, right? It's good for you because it has a lot of data, but it tells all these data in stories that is very relatable, and they're not like my articles. They're short. They're short. So
if you have not seen his articles, you should go and take a look. So a wealth of common sense.
A wealth of common sense for those people that is actually interested in, let's say, broad-based investing, right? There's this guy called Ben Felix. So he runs a podcast called Rational Reminder. It's a very good podcast. And where I got to know him is through his YouTube videos, right? That he breaks down some of these things, whether we talk about, let's say, factor investing, index investing, right? What is the research behind it? It's quite thorough, and then it's quite well broken down. If let's say you're investing that way, right, that might be something to actually check out, because it will help you go deeper into whether you can get like higher conviction into this way of investing.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
No issue.